Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. Got Bob Chapman back again today, so we want to focus on the economy, and Bob has such incredible insight into what's going on. I've said it before on the program, and I'll say it again. He issues a twice-weekly international forecaster. He's been at this for about 50 years. He has lots of inside information, lots of insight and contacts with people he's built up over the years. And you'll see material in Bob's reports that don't make it to the public surface, shall we say, until weeks, months later. But you can read it well in advance in Bob's very insightful reports. So it really, anybody following the economy and concerned about what's going on and how it affects their own economic situation, it's a treasure trove of information. Bob, I welcome you, and maybe we can focus a little bit on what I asked you about. And let me just say this. I remember growing up, when occasionally I would go to the amusement park, or my parents would take me, I should say. I was a kid, and growing up in Boston and the coastal area, so there was an amusement. There was one or two amusement parks, I think. And I loved going to the amusement park, but the one thing I never wanted to go anywhere near was the roller coaster. Well, gold and silver markets, Bob, maybe some of the other commodity markets as well, but certainly gold and silver markets, and especially silver, talk about a roller coaster. And you made a few comments to me about it. I imagine some listeners to this program are very concerned about what's going on. Maybe you can explain to them what you explained to me.
Well, first of all, to enlighten those who are not from Boston, the roller coasters were at Revere Beach and Nantasket Beach.
Oh, I remember them, yes.
And now they're gone.
They're gone.
And when I graduated from high school, I went on the one at Revere Beach 17 times that night.
My goodness.
And it got so that it was nothing anymore, you know. But anyway, it's like a roller coaster. Why? Because your government is in manipulating the market. They want commodities to go down and gold and silver to go down. Gold and silver reflect, in part, inflation. The commodities reflect inflation as well, because rising commodity prices are a result, as well as rising gold and silver prices, are a result of people leaving the general market and the bond market. And they want to arrest that flow. They want to keep inflation down, so if commodity prices go down because they rig the market, then inflation won't go up as quickly and as strongly. Gold and silver are reflections of not only inflation, but in the quality of the currency and the debt structure of the country, which both happen to be very bad right now. And so that's why they're doing what they're doing. It's legal. They do it under an executive order put in place in August of 1988 by Ronald Reagan, the president's group on financial markets, and they rig every market in the world 24/7. Needless to say, they're abusing the executive order. And what needs to be done is your Congress has to be convinced that they should pass a law stopping that, because we no longer have free markets. The only people who make money in the markets are people in gold and silver, and also people who create the inside information like our big banks and brokerage houses and the Federal Reserve.
Oh, indeed so, and I've written a little bit about market manipulation. It really is a very, very disturbing story, and sadly, not enough people know about it. A small minority know that this goes on. But every market, whether we're talking about commodities, stocks, bonds, currencies, they're all manipulated, and the big Wall Street profiteers, they make it big going up and they make it big going down, but the sacrificial lambs, in other words, ordinary people like me, for sure, Bob, you know, we can be hung out to dry anytime, because all we want to do is protect our limited wealth, whatever it is, and have something there for ourselves in our later years. And speaking for myself, not everybody feels this way, but I don't like roller coaster rides. I just like things that are reasonably safe and over a long period will provide that secure nest egg, and you'll be able to live out your senior years not in poverty. You may not be looking for super wealth, but you want to be sure that you're not in poverty. Well, I feel altogether different about gold and silver, Bob. For sure, I've been watching it lately more intensively than I usually do, and there's no question that I agree with you completely that the gold and silver in a world where fiat currencies. My God, the expression that I love that I read in an article 2 or 3 years ago, an Asian analyst referred to the dollar specifically as toilet paper. Toilet paper. Well, I guess the major fiat currencies people can think about, the euro for sure and the dollar for sure, they're deteriorating in value. But the only true store of value as far as currencies go are gold and silver. So I'm willing to go through that terrible roller coaster ride. Because as you've explained many times, Bob, both of those, shall we call them currencies, commodities, call them what you want, they're in a long-term bull trend, and you can rock it up and you can rock it back down a little bit, but as you explained, Bob, over a longer period, and I think in one of your recent reports, you said you expect this to continue for another 5 or 10 years. Over that time, you see much, much higher valuations. But you understand it better, so I'll let you carry on with that.
Well, you're right about the future for gold and silver. I don't see any other way other than going up. And it's a long-term investment. You don't trade it. And I have to tell people that every day. And it's disappointing because people see all these swings and they like to take advantage of them, but they're not professionals and they can't do that. The only safe place in investment today is gold and silver related assets, no matter how volatile they are. You don't have any choice. If you want to lose money, you go into bonds. I mean, how can somebody buy a bond fund or even 10-year note that's paying 3.18 this morning, and inflation's 10%.
Explain, explain that, Bob, because that listeners may not understand the fact that the official numbers coming from our government departments, they are lies. They are manipulated. They're false. Whether we're talking about inflation, the employment report, they put out manipulated numbers to deceive people. Inflation is one of them. So, you know, I mean, we have I don't even know what the official inflation number is. What, 1%, 2%? And anybody who eats, Bob, the way I like to explain it, anybody who eats, drives a car, heats their home, air conditions it, pays medical bills, and has kids in college, they understand inflation very well.
Well, you're sure right about that, especially today's prices. I mean, you know, to go to college when I went, it was $1,000 a year. And that same school, which is Northeastern University, is now $42,000, and Harvard, which I was accepted to but refused, that's somewhere around 70,000. And so that's 4 times 7 is 28. That's 280,000. And you have to keep the student in all of the things that the student needs. So you double the figure. It's going to cost you $500,000 after tax dollars to send your son or daughter to Harvard. And it'll cost about half as much to go to Northeastern, both of which are equal schools, as far as I'm concerned. And but anyway, that's the cost of what it is today, and it's crazy. I mean, these young people are coming out of university and being offered jobs between $25,000 and $40,000 a year. What would it take you? 15, 16 years to get even?
Oh,
I mean,
crazy.
That's ludicrous.
It's ludicrous, Bob. The kids, unless you have rich parents, kids need to take out these oppressive loans that if you default on them, you always have to repay, even at the expense of garnishing your wages, your Social Security. I mean, kids can run up six-figure debts in some cases, and you pay these enormous tuitions. You can see what an enormous debt that these kids have. Bob, I went to that other school you turned down beginning in 1952, and my freshman year tuition for the full year was $600. When I graduated in 1956, my senior year full year tuition was $1,000. So with fees, and if you lived at school, double those numbers. I mean, it was nothing. I didn't need a loan to get through school. With a little help that my father gave me in part-time work and summer jobs, I had zero debt when I graduated. From graduate school, after a couple of years in the service, I needed to borrow the grand sum, Bob, of about $300. And easily within my first year of employment in 1960, I wiped that debt out. $300 meant more then than it does now, but it was minor. It was an inconsequential debt for me to eliminate very easily in my first official working year. But the kids today, it's a whole different story.
Well, you're right, and I never had any debt when I finished either. I worked all kinds of jobs, but the jobs aren't there. The illegal aliens have taken the jobs, so you know the kids can't get work. And but anyway, the economy is not recovering. It's not going to recover. Congress is not going to have stimulus 3, but the Fed is going to have QE3. They may call it something else, but they have to have it, because if they don't, the system goes under. And it's really as simple as that. And I think that the stock market has reflected that by, on the Dow, going from 10,800 to 12,800. It slipped off a little bit in the last several days. But the point is, that's what that rally was all about. And they know, because they tell the Fed what to do, because they own the Fed. So they create the inside information. They don't use it or copy it. And a pretty unique position to be in. And so what they're doing isn't working, and they know that. All they've done is save the financial industry for the time being, and the government for the time being, but they can't keep on doing that indefinitely. All of them are insolvent. It's a Ponzi scheme. And so eventually what's going to happen is the house is going to come tumbling down. And that happens when you inject too much money in credit, which you create out of thin air, into the economy. And that's what the Fed does. And the Fed obliges the Treasury by buying Treasury bonds, bills, and notes, and the agency securities. And in doing that, they further that monetization, which causes inflation. And inflation right now is 10%. I predicted a year ago it would be 14% by the end of the year. I think that's conservative now. Next year with QE2, stimulus 2 coming through the pipeline, we're looking at 25% to 30%, unless they kick an axe and cut about three quarters of the cost of the deficit, the budget deficits of the country, off, and they're not going to do that because they won't get reelected. And so on it goes. So by the end of 3 years from now, we should be at 50% inflation, which is also called hyperinflation. And that's when you get paid and you go right out immediately and spend the money on food and clothing or whatever you want to spend it on before it's worth less the following day or hour or week or whatever. And spending experience in economies like Weimar between 1920 and 23 in Germany, and recently Zimbabwe, and where I used to live, as a matter of fact. It was great when I lived there, but I saw it was coming, and I got out of town fast. And so this is where this is all headed, unfortunately. And we talk about that a lot in the International Forecaster. And we talk about gold and silver in there and many, many other things.
Whoops. Bob, are you still there?
Yes.
I thought maybe we were disconnected. Do talk about everything related to the economy, politics, major related issues, and everything ties together, Bob, because we have a nexus between the financial powers in the country and their headquartered on Wall Street, for sure, the big major Wall Street firms, and their lackeys that they choose and, shall we say, place in office. They fund them. They control the elections, really. We go through an election process that I refer to as theater, because ordinary people don't choose the candidates. We have a duopoly, not a democracy. And the party bosses and the corporate bosses choose the people to occupy the power positions. And ordinary mere mortals like myself, and I imagine everyone listening to this program, we have no choice at all. You can vote from column A or column B, but it's really one column disguised as two columns. So it literally doesn't make any difference whether it's Obama or George Bush, because the policies are virtually identical. That's the kind of corrupted system that we live under, and it's destroying us, because the policies, as you know and you write about, Bob, are so extreme, so destructive, and they're not getting better, they're getting worse, and the end of the road is a very bad ending. One of the great quotes that I like, you remember Herb Stein worked for Richard Nixon, his chief economic advisor, and what he said has been quoted using various words, but basically it came down to him saying, what can't go on forever won't.
A verity. And that happens to be in Harvard's motto as well. And although it's called Veritas.
Veritas.
He was right. And, you know, there's practicality in things. And the misdirection, lies, and propaganda, the brainwashing that goes on in America is colossal by government. And people don't know it, but there's giant pools of money that are used for that by government through advertising agencies and others every year. And the public doesn't understand because they're not listening to alternative media, talk shows, and going into the internet to find out alternative ideas. And what's happening, particularly among the young people, is that they're finding out what's been going on, and they're deeply disturbed. But that's not only the young people in America. It's the young people all over the world. I mean, the minute I get off a broadcast, I get emails coming in from Russia and Turkey and you name it. They come. And so people are learning all over the world what the problems really are and what the solutions are. And the only solution for America and Europe and England, generally speaking, is classical economics. not Keynesianism. It is a taking down of the malinvestments in the system. Everybody who is bankrupt, and if that includes the top six banks in America, under our system, they should be allowed to go bankrupt. It's the only way you're going to purge the system. And the quicker you do it, the better. And it's going to be painful, but the longer you wait, the greater the pain. Because the patient's still going to live, for the most part. And so that's what we must do. And we must do it in a very careful manner. But the people who are in charge, that revolving door from Wall Street and banking into the Treasury and into the Federal Reserve, as long as we have that set up, and the setup that all of these companies fund these politicians, which means 95% of them are owned by special interests. And they're not going to listen to you. They listen to from whomever gives them money to get reelected. And so we're in a very terrible, difficult position in America. And if we don't do that, it will be brought upon us involuntarily. Hyperinflation, a collapse into deflationary depression, and after that, then you'll have your changes in government, and sometimes they're not placid. Sometimes they're violent.
They sure are, and the most recent one that can resonate with listeners is what happened when Germany's Weimar Republic went down, replaced by Adolf Hitler, and he was a Western banker's choice, Bob.
That's right.
I mean, they basically, Western bankers, I think maybe more UK than Wall Street, although I'm not sure. The British Empire was still intact then, no longer. Hitler was their choice, and they manipulated the system to make him chancellor, even though in the most recent election he did not win a majority of the vote, but they maneuvered President von Hindenburg to appoint him chancellor.
And as they say, the rest
is history.
And the outcrop, it's my opinion today, that the Fabian socialist, John Maynard Keynes, became a corporatist fascist, and that economic movement is with us today in many governments in high places, and that's what it's leading us to, these government-oriented societies that are controlled by corporations, and that is not good because all it is a form of national socialism, and it puts us in a position where we don't have any say about anything. And I believe that the funding during the 1920s and 30s, 40s, for that matter, of Adolf Hitler was a trial run for what we're going through today. And I never realized that until several years ago. When I looked at the whole thing, I said, gee, this is a trial run in reference. And I've interrogated a lot of Germans, particularly military people. And they really never had a clue that they were set up. And they really were set up. And so wasn't Hitler, by the way. He didn't realize where the bulk of the funding was coming from, because he saw it coming through Thyssen and Krupp and IG and all of those major German companies. But they were being funneled from London in the United States.
Oh, absolutely. And even back in 1917, Bob, amazingly, Wall Street backed the Bolsheviks, the more extreme element in what became Soviet Russia, over the moderate Mensheviks. The Russian Revolution was two revolutions. In the second one, the Bolsheviks prevailed. But Wall Street supported the Bolsheviks. They saw a business opportunity there. Amazing.
Well, not only that, when Lenin and others wanted to go to Russia, the Germans gave them safe passage right through the country.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason they wanted it, they wanted them over there upsetting everything in Russia so that Russia wouldn't attack them. And that worked for 20 or 30 years, but finally the Russians became as aggressive with communism as Hitler did with fascism.
But, of course, Hitler was the one that invaded, he was the one who invaded Soviet Russia.
Well, his excuse was he was beating them to the punch.
He was beating them to the punch.
And there's a lot to be said for that, incidentally, because they were amassing troops. There's no question.
Russia.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that is something I don't know that much about. I'm going to have to look into that because that's a very, very interesting point.
Well, there's another point here. Right after the First World War was over, the Rhineland was sort of a neutral zone. And the Germans were not supposed to be making any armaments. Well, they were making them hand over fist, and the French are standing there saying, oh, how about that? Well, they can't break through our line anyway, so let them do what they want. And that's how Hitler formed the most formidable army in Europe, great training, great equipment. And that's why the Germans were so difficult to defeat. And but it all started by them allowing the German government to break the treaty.
And do what they want.
Well, you know, and then that was followed by direct participation of and testing of German products in 1938 and 39 in Spain. They were responsible for the Republicans winning the Civil War in Spain.
Oh, absolutely. The first ever air bombing campaign, what we now lovingly refer to as shock and awe. Well, Hitler conducted really the first shock and awe. I think there was one actually before that, but he conducted the infamous Guernica raid against oh, dear. I get my loyalists and my nationalists mixed up. Anyway, he was pro-Franco, the fascist, and against the resistance. I once wrote about that. It's a very complicated story. You really need a whole book to get into it and explain it. But had the fascists been defeated, possibly it could have had an effect on the history following that. But they weren't. They weren't. Anyway, that's another story.
Well, I think Spain, after the war was over, the Second World War, really understood how they got taken to the cleaners in that supposed communist versus fascist. And if you've ever been outside of Madrid, I lived in Spain, they have a cathedral that is cut into the side of a mountain. And at the center of that cathedral, they have two sarcophagus, and there's one unnamed soldier in each one from each side of that civil war. Just thought I'd throw that in.
Oh, well, again, that's something I had no idea about. And there were a lot of different elements in that war. I guess on the Franco side, it was him. I don't know who in the country was allied with him, but he was there, supported by Hitler, certainly not opposed by Franklin Roosevelt. Roosevelt very much did not support the opposition, but the opposition was very diverse. And they couldn't quite get together on all the things you need to do to unify against a common enemy. So they really, to a great extent, ended up defeating themselves.
Now, George Orwell speaks about that in one of his books.
Oh,
I can't remember.
I forget the title, but I read the book, and Orwell was there during the war.
That's right, and he had an opportunity early in the morning to shoot one of the enemy who was going to the bathroom. And he refused to do it because he couldn't kill somebody in that mode of living, you know, that part of living. Interesting story.
Oh, very interesting.
As everybody can see, we've read a lot of books.
Indeed we have. The right books, Bob. One of the great stories out of World War One was, and I forget which year it was, but one year at Christmas time, a truce was called. And the opposing forces, the Kaiser's German forces and the Western forces, they actually got together or exchanged greetings. Just the common soldiers they didn't want to be there fighting a war. They were basically the same kinds of people. And they just exchanged greetings for about, maybe a 2-week period. And then it all came to an end and the shooting, began again.
That was supposedly humanitarian warfare. That trench warfare was horrible.
Oh, it was horrible.
And they were also exchanging rations and cigarettes and things like that. And it's not referred to an all quiet in the Western Front by Remarque, but it's a good book for people to read who want to see what happens in war. And it wasn't a violent book, nor was the movie. It's the end of the book that is fascinating, which is human nature.
Oh, absolutely. We're out of time. I've got to bring it to an end. But the punchline for me on that Christmas exchange was, if it was up to ordinary people, just the soldiers in the trenches, there probably wouldn't be wars. But if there were, they'd end up very quickly, and both sides would get together, showing ordinary people are a lot smarter than people who run the world. They destroy so much of it. Ordinary people can put it back together again. Bob, we're out of time. Many thanks. I'll shoot you an email. I look forward to having you back next month.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks, Bob. And join us this weekend, of course, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturdays and Sundays. Make it a regular habit.